Now.
Hey guys, this is episode 14 of the Midcasters. I'm your co-host Jalen, and today I'm always joined by
your favorite film talker and also your favorite comic book TikToker, Craig.
Awesome. And today we got a slew of news and a little bit of some things to make you ask some questions on why. So let's start up first. There is no surprise here, but Millie Bobby Brown is set to do a new project, surprise, surprise, with Netflix. And they're going to be developing a feature adaptation of her best-selling debut novel, 19 Steps, for Netflix. Didn't know she wrote a book, but what are you thinking about this? Do you think she's trapped? Do you think this is going to be a positive project or fall flat on its face?
Honestly, I can't name any project that she's done outside of Netflix. And I feel like it's kind of like Christopher Nolan with Warner Brothers. Well, I mean, he left Warner Brothers at the Tenet, but you get the point. I think it's just pretty much going to be that way for a while. But Millie Bobby Brown and Netflix is kind of like the Nolan Warner Brothers partnership, but I think she needs to hightail it out of there.
I know. I don't know how long this contract's for, or if it's easy money or just easier for her. I'm not looking forward to it, but I also didn't know she wrote a book.
I didn't know that either.
I saw it and I was like, wait, let's reverse this. But I guess it's a World War II novel, drawing experiences of her own grandmother, obviously written by her. And it follows the story of an 18-year-old girl living in East London. And over the course of the book, the character navigates the challenges of wartime life, including the threat of bombings. Honestly, just her basic World War II novel.
Sounds interesting, but I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. But that kind of brings us to the question is like, what do you think about Netflix originals, like the shows compared to the movies? Do you think that they're always just flopping, or do you think that they're good? Do you think there's room for growth? I always felt like the shows were better than the movies, which is so weird. But what do you think?
Not only do I agree with that, but stop the pain. The movies are so terrible. I can only think of maybe 4 or 5 movie Netflix. I can only think of maybe on one hand of Netflix movies that I actually enjoyed.
And not movies that are bought by Netflix, movies that are actually produced, directed, made by Netflix. So just want to clarify the difference there.
Yeah.
It's like May, December, Marriage Story. I don't consider those Netflix movies because they weren't made by Netflix. They were made by other distributors or other whatever.
Right. And Netflix is, I mean, when COVID hit, they canceled like freaking 9 shows. And I was so pissed off about that because 2 of those shows that they canceled, I thoroughly enjoyed. And I was so upset that we have not gotten the ending to those shows.
I know. I'll never forgive them for canceling shows. I always felt like even with The Crown, which is one of their best shows that they've ever made, it's just been like a huge downgrade. Ever since House of Cards kind of left, it just kind of went downhill with their shows.
Right. Honestly, I think Netflix, I prefer the weekly episodes over the binging, because binging has made us very selfish as consumers, because a lot of times people, no one wants spoilers, so a lot of times people will go on the internet and see what new season of their favorite show is, I mean, the reaction is, and sometimes they'll get spoiled on it. So I enjoy the weekly episodes just because it gives us time to consume them and talk about it and what's going to happen next in the upcoming episodes, stuff like that.
Exactly. But let's move on to some other news that I think is way more positive. James Spader is set to reprise his role as the amazing Ultron who we first saw in 2015's Avengers: Age of Ultron, and it will be in the Vision series or Vision Quest, whatever you want to call it. What are your thoughts about him finally returning? Do you think we have an opportunity for the most villainous Ultron yet? Or do you think it's going to fall flat since it's a series?
Honestly, I'm so burnt out from Marvel in general, not only from the movies, but also from the shows. But he did an excellent job as Ultron. But the problem is that he, as the main villain, he only has 15 minutes of screen time in the movie. I'm like, how is that possible?
I wish he was more villainous and just more menacing and more of a rated R type of villain. I feel like maybe like his own saga would have probably been better. I really thought we were going to get him in Armor Wars. It would have made sense just given his connection with Tony and the Iron Patriot, but we shall see how that progresses. I'm excited because I do love Age of Ultron. I think that's the best Avengers movie in my opinion. But it like made me start thinking like who's a good villain? Meaning like who's done a good job at making you hate them as an actor? And I know we've kind of touched on it before, but like who's your favorite villain in any genre, any movie? And who do you think did a really good job at making the audience hate them?
Definitely, I absolutely, with a passion, just love and also despise Denzel in Training Day because he always plays the good guys, and seeing him play such a just a cold, menacing, crooked cop, I was just like, oh, Denzel, I love you, but why you gotta make me hate you?
Exactly. I think that's a good one too. I want to say Joaquin Phoenix in Gladiator. Oh my gosh, I despise that man with a passion. The tongue out, the thumbs down. I'm like, we're gonna see that in Gladiator 2 from Joseph Quinn's character.
I still need to watch that before the second one comes out.
I know. I feel like it's fitting now, especially since Joaquin Phoenix is seen as a villain in real life because apparently he's tried to pull the dropping out stunt two other times, but obviously it didn't happen. And what were the movies? You can cut this part out. He tried to do it two separate times. He tried to back out of the Joker in 2019 and Come On, Come On in 2023, and again with Napoleon, which I think he should have dropped out of Napoleon because he wasn't very good. But this begs the question, is he a villain in real life for doing this?
I specifically need more context as to why, because my thing is if it's a personal issue, then that's fine. But if you already made a kind of like made a binding contract with someone to do something, you should honor that.
Exactly. I need more context. But there's some actors that we have more context on, and that would be Blake Lively, obviously, and Ryan Reynolds in the It Ends With Us issue, and the sequel is in doubt. But it has also come out that allegedly Ryan Reynolds has scabbed, which means during the writer's strike last year, also the actor's strike, he wrote the rooftop scene, which was originally believed was ad-libbed by Blake Lively, but we know Blake Lively doesn't know how to do that or improv, in my opinion. And the director didn't even know. What do you think about that? Do you think he's scabbed? Do you think that's a bad deal? Obviously, it is a bad deal, but what are your thoughts? And even the director not knowing.
My thoughts is that my opinion on him will forever not change. He is still a mediocre actor, no pun intended. And the whole scabbing thing, that doesn't not only is that not surprising, he's not the first one. Zachary Levi, I believe, from Shazam.
Oh, him.
And also, what's his name? Stephen Amell from the Arrow TV series. He is not. Ryan Reynolds is not the only one that isn't well liked right now.
I like that this is coming out because A, I'm not surprised, and B, people were so blinded, are so blinded by him as Deadpool. Literally, he is Deadpool. Like, I don't think he portrays the character very well, and that's just my opinion, and that's fine to disagree with me. But I think to do this under the director's nose, especially showing her version of the film while he was in the hospital, is the most shadiest thing I've ever saw. And she's the executive producer, so she's not like the one that bankrolled this, not like the director's production company, Wayfarer Studios, which was co-financed with TSG Entertainment. And it's just like, she really tried to overhaul this, and now she allegedly is like, who's going to work with me again? And like, baby girl, you did this to yourself. And you're getting all these people to gaslight us into believing that you were all for the message of the story, when in reality, she was promoting her hair care line, which is seeing like enormous amounts of returns.
This is Don't Worry, Darling all over again.
But Don't Worry, Darling was more genuine, in my opinion. This one I feel like is really forced, though I know the issues are sincere.
Honestly, the only good thing about that film was Florence Pugh and Chris Pine. They were the only redeeming things about that movie.
I honestly really enjoyed that movie. I mean, the script was changed a crap ton. I'm still looking forward to Olivia Wilde's directing of Spider-Woman, Spider-Girl, whatever you want to call her. Interested to see what happens with that. I would not be surprised if she makes Sydney Sweeney into one of those roles, but that's just my opinion. Ugh. But Blake Lively, she just has the most insincere vibe about her that like has been present since Gossip Girl. I don't even think she was good in Gossip Girl. It was all about Blair, in my opinion. And I'm like, you are a CW actor, so we need to be for real right now.
The only thing I've ever seen her in that I've enjoyed is The Shallows. And like I said, anything involving humans getting towed up by animals, I'm here for it.
It's because it was a shark movie. The shark was the real star of the show. I mean, 37 Meters Down is way better, but even Fall is way better than The Shallows. But Shallows is still an enjoyable movie because sharks are a good draw for any audience, especially during the summer.
Right.
But hopefully this is the end. It ends with us, ends with Blake Lively, and we hear no more about this, and that there is no sequel unless Blake is not involved in the sequel. But the director owns the rights to make these films, so we shall see what happens. Maybe she'll change her tune, but we shall see. I have an interesting story, though, and I just never thought I'd hear these in the same sentence. Quentin Tarantino says he will not watch Toy Story 4 since the third movie is perfect and has the best ending. What are your thoughts on that? And do you think he'll ever watch the fourth one and the fifth one that we're going to be seeing? Honestly, I like the fourth one. I didn't see any problem with it, but what are your thoughts on that?
I completely agree with him. It was a waste of time. I wanted my money back after watching the fourth one. It was complete garbage, basura, and Not only did it break my heart, and not in a good way, in a like I wanted to throw my soda cup at the screen way.
It's honestly felt like there was a lot more. I don't know why, it just feels like there was a lot more Toy Story films made. Isn't the fourth one with a Forky and he calls himself Trash?
Yeah, and I just wanted
that to was my favorite character.
I just wanted to stomp on that stupid thing because.
And the new one was supposed to kind of build, not build off, to kind of, I don't know if you want to say address the social media thing with children and stuff like that. I mean, it's an interesting concept, but it's also a lazy concept. But it makes sense that they would evolve into doing that. But let's rest Tom Hanks and Tim Allen, please.
They also dumbed down Buzz, which I didn't know. That made me so upset. They made him a complete idiot.
It's because of Lightyear and Chris Evans. We can thank him for that.
And the movie is just, it lacks the heart and the the emotion that the other three did.
That's a completely valid thought process on that. But let's move on to some things that I have always wondered. I mean, there's practical effects, there's CGI effects, and then there's the amazing technology that Star Wars has, and it's that screen where they already build in the environment. So there's no green screen, no blue screen. It's already built in, and the actors are obviously walking onto set with it there. What are your thoughts on practical effects, and what's your favorite practical effect you've ever seen?
I love practical effects. I think it's because I think Nolan popularized it. The where everyone kind of wants to do it, because before they didn't really use a whole lot of it, but and also Tom Cruise, he prefers a lot of practical. He does use CGI like here and there, but a lot of times he prefers VFX and practical to make it as realistic
as possible. And his own stunts as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I do prefer practical. I'm not a big CGI guy. I prefer VFX and practical. And personally, my favorite practical is one of the most recent ones, Alien from Alien Romulus. To find out that they use that they use practical effects for a majority of the film was amazing. And also Nolan's Inception, the hallway scene, that scene was absolutely amazing.
My favorite effect would probably be the fact that Christopher Nolan literally built a miniature atomic bomb for Oppenheimer, and I will never get over how amazing that is. Another one would be Batman. He did you know, the chase through the under, like the freeway that's underground, kind of.
Yeah.
It was like a miniature set that he built for that. Star Wars, that's another good one. They're very creative, especially in the 70s. I mean, I feel like that's a film that ages really well. Just because I feel like there's more miniature figures built. I'm never going to get over Star Wars because I just think it's amazing and it just feels so authentic. And when you're stepping into that world, you're stepping into the world. And I think the addition of that new technology that they're implementing in Star Wars, well, I think it's just Star Wars for now, but I think they need to be doing it with Marvel. That's just my opinion. Is that you make it already, so then that saves you time post-work or post-filming to edit it, and you're allowing the actors to actually see the world that they're getting into.
Right.
And I just think it's amazing, and I would love to see Marvel do it, just because Marvel is... It has so many different worlds, so many different characters, so many different things. And only practical effects can only do so much.
Right. Like, also, Twisters, I really love, even though I'm not a fan of the story or the main character at all, I do love that they, that there's no CGI in the film. It's strictly VFX, and And the set pieces are also really great in that film as well.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, I'm trying to find the name of the thing. And I know Jon Favreau kind of headed the creation of that effect. Let me see if it's on Lucasfilms. Because they've always been groundbreaking in visual effects because they are like the OG sci-fi.
Right.
But I will always forever love Lucasfilms. I can't find the name of it, but I know they're kind of using it now, and I always thought about the comment from Christian Bale because he's never really acted with a blue screen or a green screen. And when he was on Thor: Love and Thunder, like he did not know what to do. And I'm like, I cannot blame him for that. But I'm also like, maybe he should have stepped out a little bit more to gain that experience and knowledge. And he wouldn't have
Yeah.
been like so.
And I also really love how a lot of horror movies use practical effects.
Oh yes, exactly. Oh my goodness, I will never get over practical effects. I mean, visual effects are cool if it's done right and you give them time. And sometimes I get that you'll need to do it, especially if you're in space, if there's like a really different action sequence. What I really hate is when they use visual effects for fighting. I saw it in Echo and I'm like, ooh. And then I saw it in Deadpool and I'm like, ooh. And they're like, oh,
Oh,
it's supposed to
yeah.
be like that in Deadpool as like a making fun of how it's been lately. A, you're making fun of the workers that have to do it. B, you're making fun of the studio, so that's not making you look any good. And I could see like visual effects workers not wanting to work with those actors because of that, or companies in general. I'm like, I don't think it was done on purpose. I think it was done like with complete sincerity. It's like the Flash. I'm like, you did that on purpose.
Oh God.
Like you
Ugh.
guys were just that bad that it ended up like that. Like you didn't do it knowing that it was going to look that bad. I feel like Thor: Love and Thunder might have done
That's how I feel
it.
about that's how I feel about Nolan. Nolan's a great storyteller, and you know, his visually his movies look amazing, the score, VFX, all of that. But he is very bad when it comes to his fight scenes.
Oh my gosh, I just want it to be like realistic. And I don't know if you did see the new Deadpool with or seen the scene where Wolverine's like jumping out of like a bus, I think, with Deadpool. I'm like, that looks so incredibly bad. And somebody was like, no, it's meant to be like that. No, baby. No, it's not. Because you guys are forcing this out. You didn't like what? Filming didn't like end until like March or May or something like that. I'm like, y'all did that on purpose. So let's be for real.
If anything, I think they should have pushed the film back if they were going to just do reshoots.
I still think the Marvel should have been released in July and then Deadpool release in 2025.
I agree, but I also don't like how Disney threw Nia DaCosta under the bus for the failure of the Marvels because they were just
She's
coming
amazing.
back from the
She
from the
killed it
strike.
in Candyman. She killed
Yeah,
it.
because
That was so good.
when the strike ended, I mean the film came out a couple of weeks after that, and they couldn't promote the film because of the strike.
I know
And
one day.
yeah.
One single day. Oh my gosh. I blame them for that. They set it up for failure and I'm done with that. But let's kind of move in like with practical effects, visual effects. Let's talk about movies that have not aged well in your opinion. And it can be any number of factors. For me, it's probably the original Dune. Oh, it's a trend. It's horrendously bad. The visual effects are horrendous. The acting is not there. I don't think it's nowhere near the new ones.
What's the Batman film with the nipple suit?
Oh, I would not know. Is that the one with Uma Thurman in it, or the one with Danny DeVito,
I think that's the one with, I think that's George Clooney's
or?
Batman.
Oh, that one. Oh, you're talking about his actual suit?
Yeah.
Oh, I always forget he was Batman, and I think he would like to forget he was Batman too.
Yeah. yeah, that nipple suit, it is completely ridiculous. And I'm
Only
glad they
Batman would do
never
something.
went back to it. And I don't know what the hell they were thinking when they made that hideous, disgusting looking suit.
Did Val Kilmer have a better suit?
God, let me check.
There's so many. It's hard to keep up. That's part of the reasons why, part of my reason why I don't like Batman. It's like there's so many. I can't keep up. Like, be consistent with
Yeah.
who Batman is, and I think that's what James Gunn needs to do, which he will do.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold up. Oh no. Val Kilmer had the nipple suit.
Oh, lovely, lovely, lovely.
Yeah. Ugh, God. Grotesque. Yeah, absolutely hideous. But something else that didn't age too well was there's a scene in The Breakfast Club where
The
Bender,
Breakfast Club.
yeah, where Bender is hiding under the table, and Molly Ringwald's character, she's wearing a dress, and he looks under her dress, and he tries to remove something with his teeth, and she knees him in the face.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah,
Oh, Lord.
it's bad.
What do you think their issue is with their Batman suits? And they've been like all over the place with the looks. A, what's your favorite Batman suit, like in live action? And B, why do you think they have the issues with not being like a really good suit?
Well, my favorite used to be the Nolan. It used to be the Nolan suit, but oh my God, Pattinson suit from the Matt Reeves film, absolutely amazing. It because it reminds me that not only does the movie remind me of like the Arkham video games, but also the suit does as well as also in even the a lot of the fighting scenes. But aside from that, I think I don't know what the problem with the suits are. The ugliest one is definitely the Val Kilmer one.
I always forget he was Batman too.
yeah, but I don't think it usually depends on your preference. Some people like a voice modulator in the suit so he can change his voice, but
I thought he like did that on his own. Like he didn't need the voice changer.
I don't think so either, but I don't think he needs to deepen his voice because he's already wearing a mask.
But I feel like people would know who he is if he like knew them in real life as Bruce Banner.
That's exactly why I think the whole bat voice from the Nolan films is completely silly and stupid. Like, dude, you're wearing a mask. They're not going to be like, oh my God, it's Bruce Wayne.
I mean, except for the lady he loves. I can't remember her name. She's like played by Katie Holmes, and then she's played by Maggie Gyllenhaal. Is all over the place.
Oh, yeah, they just use her as a plot device. I absolutely hated that.
I don't even know her name. I'm like, I don't know if she was ever in the comics.
Rachel.
I need Batman to like be normal. And when I say that, I mean I don't need this dude like dragging on my parents' side. Okay, yeah, like 30 years ago. We need to move on. Because why are we staying in this space, this negative space that we have? A, go to a therapist. B, get out of the house. C, you don't need to be Batman all the time. Be Bruce Wayne. I feel like he just like wants to drag on. People would feel sorry for him. I'm like, bro, we need to move on with our lives.
Yeah, the betrayal, they have not even reached the level of they haven't even addressed every single thing that he actually does in the comics on the big screen.
Exactly. All I know is he doesn't kill anymore. He has a no-kill rule, and that's it. Well, he did kill, but then he stopped killing.
It's ridiculous how Robert Pattinson is the only live-action Batman that doesn't kill, and every single one of the other ones have.
I thought maybe I was wrong.
Yeah, you should go back and watch the 90 films. They've killed.
Well, Batman's all over the place. Hopefully there's some consistency with James Gunn, and we get a better story, and that man does not drag on about how his parents died 30-something years ago, and that he grows and develops a character.
I just want to see the rest of the Bat family.
That's valid. Isn't that what's going to be the movie?
Yeah, it's going to be Batman Brave and the Bold. It's going to be him and Damian Wayne, which is his son that he had with Talia.
The Catwoman?
No, Talia.
Don't know who that is.
He's the, you remember Batman Begins, Ra's al Ghul, the guy that Bruce trained with?
Yes.
Yes, Talia is his daughter.
Oh, okay. Well, that shall be interesting that he's actually married and has a child.
I don't know if they're going to be married. In the comics, the way it happened, which a lot of fans absolutely hated it, mm-hmm. to the point where the writers had to retcon it, but how Damien was conceived was that Talia drugged Bruce. And forced herself on him.
Well, maybe it will be a more positive story and not as icky.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But let's end on some positive notes, depending positive notes for some people. The Acolyte has officially been canceled due to the low viewership. Surprise, surprise. It allegedly cost $630,000 per minute of screen time. Obviously, viewership went down after the first two episodes. There's no plans to remove the series from Disney Plus, which obviously makes sense, but there was some removal of like merch, but quickly it was put back up. What do you think about the cancellation, and do you think it should be removed from Disney Plus and for us to forget this show ever happened?
Well, this is why I don't watch Star Wars. The fans are so freaking disrespectful and just entitled assholes. Like, they are just so miserable, and I don't think they should take it off of Disney Plus. I haven't seen the show. From my understanding, for people that actually criticize the show, they say it's not that bad, but it could have been better. But I feel like everyone else is just hating the hate.
I mean, I don't think it was a good show. I didn't finish it because it was just really bad. I don't know. It just kind of felt like, yes, it was a refreshingly different, like, look into it. But it just didn't feel like a good, refreshingly different, like how we see with Andor. Like, it was more sincere, and I feel like Andor is the best show they've made, but I just would like all of us to forget that show was ever made. It doesn't help that Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni were not involved in the production of this, which makes sense on why it wasn't as good, in my opinion. But we'll see what happens with Skeleton Crew. I think Skeleton Crew will be better, just because Dave Filoni is involved.
Yeah, I think I'll pass not only on the show, but just getting into the fandom in general, because like, what's the actress's name? Amanda.
Yes.
Amanda something. I can't remember her last name, but the guy that made a video about her, like, there's this dude that made a video response to her, and it's exactly as I expected.
Yeah, it felt like they were kind of making fun of it.
Yeah, I think they should just stop Star Wars for a while just so the fans can appreciate it.
I don't think they make as much as compared to Marvel. And I know people don't really like Kathleen Kennedy. I enjoy her work and just all the work that she's done pre-Star Wars. I think fans will jump on anybody's throats if it's not remotely related to the Skywalker saga, not including the trilogy with Kylo Ren and Rey, because I think that was a once I saw Leia float through space, that's where I stopped. I was like, what was she flying through space now? She can breathe in space. No. And then the whole thing, which ultimately she passed away and we didn't get to see her in the final one, is just like the pressure they put on her to be that Leia figure, or lose weight, and just kind of be like what we saw in the 70s and the 80s, which was completely disrespectful because she's an amazing actor outside of Star Wars.
Yeah.
But I think people, they got to give up. It's not going to be Skywalker. We need to move on from that, okay? Like, there's other stories in the world to be told in that universe.
It's just a bunch of
I still
entitled.
need a Darth Maul series.
Ooh, never thought about that.
Need a Darth Maul series, okay? Like, he's an awesome character. We only saw him in, like, technically one movie. I guess you can consider Solo another movie we saw him in. They kind of opened up for like a possible movie with him. And then obviously Emilia Clarke to be in that movie as well, because like I guess she's on the bad side now, which I actually really enjoyed Solo. I didn't have a problem with it. I think it's because it wasn't Harrison Ford and people got to move on. It's not going to be Harrison Ford anymore. He's done. That chapter is done for him. It wasn't Chris Pratt, and that's all we can be thankful for.
Right. He even hates it.
He does. That man hates Star Wars, but he loves playing Indiana Jones, even though the last Indiana Jones was not the best.
Yeah.
But he still enjoys it. It should have ended with Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which I enjoyed that one. That's not a popular movie for some people.
I still have not seen any of those films.
The first three is all you need to see. And if you want to see the one with Shia LaBeouf in it, go for it. I didn't hate it because I really like it. Cate Blanchett was the villain in it. And I don't know when it like popped in my brain. I was like, well, hold up a second. That's Cate Blanchett. Was like, wait a minute,
I'll
what?
add them to my list, but there are some things about those films specifically that have not aged well.
Yeah, some of the things in them don't age well. I
Having an
think it's just
Asian sidekick, like, wow.
oh yeah, okay. Well, we can buy let's skip that. Let's skip that. That okay, you make a good point. I like Temple of Doom though. That's a good one. He does move on from a lot of women, which I don't know. Okay, well, okay. I guess you can say the original three has not aged well.
I'm not gonna ruin it for you, so let's move on.
Oh my gosh. But that's episode 14 this week. There was just a lot of news, a lot of things to make us ponder questions. But what's one thing this week you are looking forward to, Craig?
Beetlejuice. I didn't really care before, but leading up to the promotion, Jenna Ortega wearing all these like amazing outfits, and she looks good in every one of them. Like she's like becoming a fashion icon, in my opinion.
I
And it's got
really liked how Winona Ryder like speaks so highly of her, and that they were like, oh, well, we waited for her to be born to make the second one. I was like, whoa.
that's very kind.
I know. I'm like, you just like feel like I mean, even if they weren't like on screen mother and daughter, you'd think that they were real mother and daughter. I'm like, her, Winona Ryder, and Aubrey Plaza. Like, I feel like they should all be in a movie together.
Aubrey Plaza, and It's funny because last year at the SAG Awards, they presented an award together, and I'm like,
did.
that makes perfect sense because
I
they both seem
know.
like serial killers.
Maybe like Jenna Ortega is like a younger person, like a younger version of the character, and then Aubrey Plaza is the older version. What was the one that it's a new movie that was came out with Aubrey Plaza, and Aubrey Plaza plays like the older version of the character? I'm like, they missed their opportunity there.
I know what movie you're talking about, but I can't for the love of me think of the name of it.
Oh my gosh, neither can I. Once I figure it out, I'll let you know. One thing that I'm looking forward to is hopefully I'm going to try to see Alien Romulus tomorrow for the Labor Day holiday. And they did just add Kinds of Kindness on, I guess, Hulu, Disney Plus. Now, I had to update my Hulu to Disney Plus combo now, which I did not want to do. It would not let me just play for Hulu.
I thought you already saw Alien Romulus.
No, I have not seen it yet. No, I was supposed to see it, but I just didn't get a chance to see it. I did see Blink twice, though, which was a good movie. And the trigger warning is very needed because it is a very triggering movie for a lot of people. And Zoe Kravitz is insanely brilliant, but also insanely scary.
And yeah, a couple other things.
She's insane. Channing Tatum, it was really good to see him in that type of role. And just like a reminder that he is more than 21 Jump Street.
Now, Channing Tatum, I think I'll take Channing Tatum over Reynolds any day.
Oh, I think anybody would. Because I think people like to pigeonhole him into certain roles. But when you see him in a different role, it just really works. And I think he played a really good, ominous villain in Blink twice. Like, I was scared of him, but he also had that smile that would make me fold if I looked at him in person. It's a very triggering movie for anybody who hasn't seen it. Just be warned. But yeah, that's episode 14 this week of the Midcasters. I'm your co-host, Jalen. And you can find me at Lost in Life Translation on the Tick of the Talk. Sandra Loves Movies on Letterboxd, Jalen Sanderson on Twitter, and Lost in Life Translation on the Insta of the Gram. Craig, where can they find you?
On all socials, you can find me at CraigJr97 and on YouTube at All Nerd Everything. I discuss all things movie-related, TV shows, even comic books as well, including vinyl collections, my vinyl collection. So, yeah, check me out.
Awesome. But that's episode 14 this week. Again, I'm Jalen, joined by Craig. But check y'all next week. Bye-bye.
Enjoy the rest of your week.